time for Two Blokes Talking Tech.
There is a lot going on in technology, as always.
All the latest news and information about technology.
It's fantastic to get these speeds on a mobile phone, isn't it?
The speeds on this thing are amazing.
Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Very nice, snappy performance. It's a good phone.
Yeah, there's a few pros and cons with this.
With Trevor Long from YourTechLife.com.
Now, my advice to people who like this kind of service is...
And Stephen Fennick from TechGuide.com.au.
I really like this new service. Gives you that flexibility to hear your music anywhere.
Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Stephen and Trevor always providing the best advice. Lots to talk about on Two Blokes Talking Tech.
This is Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Episode 324. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Trevor Long with you from EFTM.com. Stephen Fennick from TechGuide.com.au. Mate, we're in the Tech Guide Theatre, mate. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome, Trevor. And it's good that we're back again after a little break last week.
It's like a ratings break in radio or TV.
Was it not ratings period, was it, in the podcasting
world? Yeah, well, podcasting world, non-ratings period.
Ratings period, all right.
Wasn't observed by any other podcast.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I think people realised that I was driving across the country and you weren't, and that made it difficult to do. And we have this newfound commitment, which is now 2 years old, to always do the show together.
Yeah, and... Well, so I couldn't do it by myself. If I did, it would be called the Tech Guide Podcast,
which is
available every week on iTunes.
Get it, people. Two Blokes Talking Tech. Thanks to the good people at Netgear and Hisense. We'll tell you about them shortly. Let's get into the week in tech. Well, Stephen, we're recording this on Thursday. Tomorrow is December. I mean, hello.
Can you believe it?
Oh, yes, it's been a long year.
Yeah.
It feels like February to me.
Does it feel like so you're saying that you feel like the year's really gone fast?
No, it feels like it's dragged on.
So it still feels like February, you said?
Okay. It's dragged on. I feel like I've had, an extra 2 months in the year.
Okay. Maybe you have. Have you got your Christmas tree up yet?
No, mate, no.
Does that normally get put up in the Long household?
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think? I'm another religion or something?
I'm just asking. It's got nothing to do with religion. Just asking.
I think Christmas does.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, the act of putting a Christmas tree up is, you can be an atheist and do that, couldn't you? Or not. I'm not sure. But
I think an atheist putting up a Christmas. Where was it? I didn't see it.
Oh, it's just a tiny little tree with some lights on it. Yeah, I'll show you on the way out. Yeah, it's a sort of a new wave looking Christmas tree.
Oh man, ours is to the ceiling.
Is it?
It's a proper.
Wow. And the kids,
we've had the same one for a good 12 years.
Okay, and this obviously not a fresh one you buy every year and put in the garbage.
No.
It's a proper
they stink
plastic Christmas tree. Yeah. Do the kids help you decorate it and all that? Do they get into the spirit of it? Or
they do very much.
Do you help, or does Amanda do that?
I'm normally in charge of the structural integrity of putting the tree up with the leaves on, and then leave the rest to everyone else.
Otherwise, that is the easy part.
Putting the tree together, the easy part.
Then putting those other little the balls.
You've got to find which branches go at which level. It's a pain in the ass, mate.
Right. Okay. Cool. I'm sure we'll be seeing highlights of it on social media then when you do it, mate.
Yeah, we probably will. Two Blokes Talking Tech. Oh no, hang on. No, we're actually in the middle of a segment. Some of my best.
He's had a week off. You're rusty already.
The segment is about Christmas.
I was
just trying to remember what we were going to talk about.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
It's beginning to look a lot. Oh, no, I promised someone I would never sing again. Well, I reckon I can go all right. So, Stephen, it's going to be a big tech Christmas, let's be honest.
It's always a good tech Christmas, big tech Christmas.
I think this year better than others. We're talking a little while about Telstra's data around kids and phones in Christmas, but... I think it's interesting to me to observe people's buying habits. I think there's no doubt that accessories are still the go-to gift for Christmas because as long as you know what someone has in their tech life, you can pretty much pair anything with them. You know, a Bluetooth speaker, headphones, accessories like those are an easy go-to at Christmas time, don't you reckon?
Absolutely right, yeah. I think it's very easy to know. If obviously you know your friends what sort of phone they're using and what their habits are, whether they love music. I think headphones, earphones are you can't lose because everyone likes music, male or female, whatever age you are, music is of appeal to everybody. And I think what is in particular, I think this year, wireless earphones and headphones with headphone jacks disappearing now.
What sort of friend buys a friend a pair of headphones that need to be plugged in?
I think, well, someone who maybe may not have a big budget to spend on wireless earphones.
Okay. Yeah. But there's cheap wireless earphones now.
Yeah, there are. Of course,
60
yeah.
bucks.
Audiofly. Yeah, they were pretty cool. But yeah, I think that's one big gift. I reckon another big gift this year is going to be smart devices, like little IoT devices, where you might be able to buy someone like a smart light or a little security camera or things like that. I think they're the gifts that you can give to people who can then they're really easy to put on their wireless network, and it just gives them that bit of convenience in their life. And may even be the product that starts them on their journey with their smart products. Maybe someone like you or me who've got a few of them, we think, well, yeah, why don't we gift a product like that to a friend or family member? Mm. And that's kind of their entry into that world. Yeah. And then they'll think, oh, how good's this? And then they'll just see how easy it is and how convenient it is, and they'll get into it more themselves.
You know, a Philips Hue starter kit. And you can get starter kits with just a bulb. It doesn't even have to be the hub, because one bulb can be controlled by a little panel plus your phone. And then they can expand that with more bulbs, or you can get the starter kit with a hub. I mean, the Philips Hue is probably, I reckon, the ultimate starter into the smart home, don't you reckon?
I agree. Yeah, that the lights. I quite like the Nano Leaf. I'm a big fan of the Aurora lights, and I've just got the Rhythm module now, which means you can plug that into your lights, and then when you're playing music, the lights actually react to the sound. So I've got a little bit of a disco happening in my office nowadays. But I reckon that's a really cool gift. Security cameras, I reckon they're wire free. You know, there's the Arlo's from Netgear. I think Swan have got one now. Uniden also.
Yeah,
I've got one.
You know. And it's interesting, and we didn't talk about this because we skipped a show, but I've got all three of those up in the exact same spot at the moment, the Uniden, the Arlo and the Swan, and there is interesting incremental differences between them all. But in the end, the ability to get into the smart camera space for under $300 is what is going to drive the Swan and Uniden products. But the expandability of the Arlo system makes that the interesting one for those that have got the longer-term vision. But do you know what? I mean, someone who, has a special car in the driveway, or someone that, you know, has concerns about their backyard, you know, it's a $300 gift, mate.
Wants to keep an eye on their pets or their holiday house or their office.
Yeah.
They might have a boat parked in the driveway or something like that. So it is
a Ring video
products.
Doorbell. Now we're in the $300 space here, but you know that is an unbelievable gift especially I reckon the Ring video doorbell is a great gift for the grandparent in the family. I'm talking about in our situation. You know, saying for the kids to give a smart doorbell to the grandparents. You know, it's $300 is the kind of money a parents would spend on their own parents. You know, people in their 30s and 40s will happily spend on their own parents.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is going down the price tier. People at Officeworks sent me three little Bluetooth speakers for the kids. And I went, oh, what are these? I looked them up. They were $19.88. And I went, oh, these are going to be... Mate, I was blown away. These things, right, they're tiny, but they have LED lights on them. So the LED lights beat to the volume. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they go higher, like a waveform.
And all under $20.
I'm telling you, sound quality... very good. Yeah. Not $150 speaker sound quality, but you would have listened to $20 speakers before.
Yeah.
They're rubbish.
Yeah, they sound tinny,
Mate, these are good. I had a bloke, I put a video on Twitter, I had a bloke go and buy one that afternoon, and I wrote back and said, okay, so I'm curious to know your thoughts on the sound quality. He goes, man, it's super impressive. Yeah. So for $20, you can get a little Bluetooth speaker. It's great
good
stocking filler.
Good gift for a child. So are they designed for children or
the
for
the kids
anyone?
Love them.
Yeah. So they put on a bit of a light show.
Yeah. They come in pink, blue and, you know, black. So, yeah.
Well, that's one advantage too. In if you're looking for a tech gift, there's so much competition out there. There's a lot of value to be had. Mm. There's a lot of good prices. Like, you walk into any store, Harvey's, JB, Officeworks, Good Guys, they are competing hard for your dollar because they want your business, and all these tech products are at really great prices now. So definitely a great time to be shopping and get it out of the way early. It's December tomorrow.
Mm.
So don't leave it to the last minute because you may be scratching around.
So then another great – we talked about smart lighting and stuff, but the other great idea is one of these smart home assistants, and obviously Google Home is the only one.
Yeah.
In the market, we didn't talk about Siri HomePod being delayed, but
yes.
You know, that's been delayed. It's a pretty embarrassing second year in a row delay for Apple, AirPods and now HomePod. But you know,
anything with Pod in it, they have to take their time, don't they?
Yeah.
The Pod
or audio.
It's the Pod syndrome.
Audio and pod synth.
Yeah. Well, look, I respect the fact that they decided to wait, put it back and make it perfect rather than putting it out and make it not
they
not
missed
not
a massive opportunity with Christmas. Oh, absolutely. Voice assistants.
Yeah, they did.
Google,
totally
right. But Google, obviously, Amazon, God knows when they're coming despite the furor from the tech to the tech community. God, haven't they had themselves in a muck lather in the last week about Amazon launching and then, you know, nothing happened.
Nothing happened. Exactly right. The rumors were strong that they were, what was it supposed to be, last Friday?
Thursday, 2 o'clock, and then Friday, and then it'll be on the weekend.
Yeah,
no,
I know. It's,
Anyway, so Google Home and Google Home Mini. Now, Google Home Mini is like $80. Google Home's $200. You got the Sony Google Home speaker. You got JBL Google Home Assistant speakers. There's a bunch of them out there. And I think what's cool about that is you can have the speaker and have no smart home stuff. So you can just link it and just start asking questions, you know, whether it's the trivia or whether it's Googling stuff. And then the other thing is the amount of people that are integrating Google Home into their services. So we had Woolworths last week integrate a Woolworths app into Google Home. So you can say, hey, Google, add a liter of milk to my shopping list.
Hey, Google, add some, what is it, those lollies you like, the Allen's?
Racing cars.
The racing cars. They make racing car lollies?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Mate, you should get some. They're very good.
You've put them on the list, haven't you?
Man, I'm very hungry now. What have you done to me?
Well, I don't have any of those to give you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, on the way home, I'll be getting some.
Oh, yeah, you'll be
smashing. I won't be. No, I've been very good with my eating. I've been very good, yeah.
That's good.
So that's cool. But then yesterday, eBay announced that their app was also going to be available on Google Home. Now, what this means is you can say, hey, Google, ask eBay to find me an iPhone. And it might come back and say, which iPhone? iPhone 6, you say iPhone 6. It says, okay, I found a lot of iPhone 6s. The average price is, you know, $600. And once you narrow down that conversation, it'll actually send the link to your phone. And from that point, you can then go and shop. Yeah, oh, I don't mind. This is a cool idea.
It is really cool. And you're that back and forth. You can choose. I think the example they gave, and I put that in my stories, if you say looking for a bag and it says what color and, you know, what type of bag and so all the
why are you looking
styles.
For handbags?
No, I'm just using the example that that was provided by eBay where you have this conversation and as you said, when it finds something that fits those parameters, you just look on your phone and there it is. It makes that experience a little bit easier if you know what you're looking for. I think the other example they gave was ask eBay to find me a GoPro Hero 6, and then it'll say, okay, here are there's all these options, and the best deal is for X amount of dollars, and then you just look at your phone, and then you're away. So
the other one is you can ask it what's it worth. So you can say, hey Google, I've got an iPhone 6, what's it worth? Mm. Ask eBay, and it will then give you the average selling price of that product on eBay. So before you decide to either throw something out, give it to a friend, or sell it, Google Home can do that for you. Now, you know, it's
cash before Christmas.
There's going to be a bunch of intricacies of it. It's not going to, you know, people will trick it into not working because, you know, some things I guess won't show up in the directory. It's going to take time for it to learn. But I guess it's just an example of how that kind of shopping is going to get easier with Google Home and similar things like it.
Totally right. And we're seeing that not only the shopping experience, you mentioned Woolworths earlier. It's also just the convenience of having something to ask you, what's the traffic like? What's my day like? This the virtual assistant. I think we're becoming more, when it first was released, everyone thought, it's not really. I remember offering it to my wife. I said, I'll put one in the kitchen for you. Mm. And she went, I don't really need it. Yeah. Because it was so new and no one was used to using it. But now where she's seeing, like she saw that eBay integration and Woolies she's thinking, she's sort of suddenly thinking, okay, I might give it a try now. So I'm going to put a Google Home, the Mini out there.
Does your wife read your website?
She does actually, yeah. Yeah, she does. Can you believe that? Yeah.
My wife only looks at mine because she sometimes does the Facebook stuff.
No, that's where my wife sees it. She goes, I saw it on Facebook.
Yeah, right.
She goes, I know, I saw it on Facebook. I said, you know, you can go to, you can actually click it in. Techguide.com.au, you know. And she goes, yeah, I know. I said, she goes, I haven't opened my computer yet. And I said, well, you know, you can look at it on your phone. It's all good. Yeah. It'd be nice to get a click off my own family members. But anyway.
That's why I had three kids so that I can get three clicks a day out of them.
I'm lucky to get that. I told him, I said, you know what? The more you click, the richer we get.
Way!
So think about that. And they went, okay, all right.
Well, tell us what's on your shopping list. Tell us what you're interested in this Christmas. Tell us what you're thinking of getting for people and what people are asking you in terms of tech this Christmas. Be interested to know because we've obviously got to deal with those questions over the next month. So your feedback, your thoughts are welcome. Just go on to Twitter at Trevor Long, at Stephen Fennick, Ziggy Zaggy, the hashtag. This is Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Two Blokes Talking Tech. You're listening to Two Blokes Talking Tech
with Trevor Long and Stephen Fennick.
Well, while we're on the subject of Christmas, Telstra put some interesting
research. Merry Christmas, mate.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you too. It's
Merry Christmas to all the listeners.
You know what we should actually, total segue here. You know it's less than 2 weeks now before The Last Jedi starts in theatres. Did you know that?
Mate, that was the less worst. Less than 2 weeks. Mate, we're talking Christmas.
Christmas is
you're like the
four
Grinch.
Weeks away. The Last Jedi is only 2 weeks away. Can you believe it?
Do you know what else that means?
What does that mean? It's getting close to your birthday. When is your birthday?
Is it the 30th of December?
When's The Last Jedi come out?
Oh, the 14th of December is your birthday. Happy birthday. Do you want to take you to the movies for your birthday?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
I'll buy you a ticket to The Last Jedi. Sit right next to me for your birthday. You know what?
So what you want to do is put pins in my eyeballs for my birthday.
Okay. All right.
He took a fifth there.
All right.
I stepped over the line. I stepped over the Star Wars line.
I won't offer the ticket. I'll give it to someone else, mate, who'll appreciate it. You know?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, Stephen.
Okay, fair call.
I'd appreciate is just being left alone for a day.
Okay, fair enough.
That'd be close to my family.
We won't be recording that day then, eh?
Probably not.
It's a Thursday, okay. The 14th.
I don't know what day we're recording anymore.
Yeah, exactly right.
Neither does our audience.
It's become a magical mystery tour now.
Yeah.
But anyway, what are we talking about again? Yeah, Christmas. And Telstra's some interesting research from Telstra about how smartphones are the top of the wish list for parents, for their kids. The research from Telstra said almost half of Aussie parents will be giving their child a device for Christmas, a smartphone.
Half?
Nearly. 45% is the actual figure. But you think about it, a lot of the parents are considering buying it because their children are at the age, I think, between 10 and 12. 12 seems to be, I won't call it the right age, but the most popular age, yeah, because it varies for various people.
Because essentially also 12 is generally year 7 age, high school age too.
Yeah, that's when my kids got their
And parents. I think, thinking about it, think about the concept. It's a smart move by parents, and I'm in that position pretty much this year or next. But, you know, Jackson going to high school in 2019, so rather than getting him a smartphone in January the 15th of 2019, a week before he goes to school, rather than getting him one at the end of 2018 when his birthday is, get him one for Christmas. Yeah. Like, because he's going to love it. Like, he's going to love having a phone, isn't he? And so you're actually killing two birds with one stone.
You've already given up what you're going to give Jackson for Christmas next year.
That's what he's going to ask
you've
for.
You've already spoiled Christmas.
There's no doubt.
So
that's a very good point. He is listening, buddy. It's not guaranteed, okay?
Jackson. Yeah, we're just joking, mate. He's not going to get your phone. He's going to get you a Star Wars toy. That's what he's going to get you. Do your kids like Star Wars? Didn't someone give, was it Harry got a little Star Wars gift for his birthday?
Yeah, I'm sure they love Star Wars as a merchandise thing, but they've never seen the movies.
Okay. That's thanks to, you know,
never
happy to screen
the movies.
In the Tech Guide Theatre.
Yeah, what are they rated?
Yeah, PG.
All of them?
All good. Except for, I think, Revenge of the Sith was rated M.
Yeah, well, they're not watching that until they're 15.
Okay. Jeez, sorry, Hitler.
Well, that's what the ratings are for.
Okay. They get away with watching that. It's not a problem.
Oh, it's okay.
Not a problem.
Yeah, cheers, Uncle Steve.
There's just a few decapitations and limbs being lost to that. It's all good. No, just joking, Jackson. We won't ski with Star Wars. It's a lovely, lovely franchise.
Oh, yes,
but look,
exactly what it is. It's a franchise. It's a money making exercise.
Oh, they got me.
Just have a look around your room.
Have a look around here. Yeah, I think I've paid for Lucasfilm a fair bit of their bottom line is in this room. Anyway, we're getting back on track here with the smartphones. But you know what? As popular as they're going to be, the research also shows that there is still a bit of concern from the parents. And the concern is that I'm going to buy this phone for my child. It's going to be a bill that I'm going to have to pay. They're going to maybe go over their data limits. They may drop it and break it. So there's also those concerns as well. So I think it's important as part of the process to not only gift your child the smartphone, but it doesn't end there. You need to educate them as well. Like teach them the appropriate use of the device and lead by example too. So if you do set the rule of, okay, no phones at the dinner table, You got to follow that yourself. It's no point you there just tapping away on your phone while your kids aren't allowed to do it. So you really need to lead by example so that they grow up knowing the right habits, the right etiquette around the phone.
Mm. They have a we spoke to the people at Telstra on the radio show this week, and they talked about the website that gives you guidance on this stuff, and they have a smartphone agreement you can download, which is basically a contract. It's a way of saying here's the agreement under which we will let you have the phone. That to me is such a smart thing. A conversation starter, because we've said this a million times. There's no point having rules if you're not discussing them. Okay, yeah. You can't just write them on a board. You have to discuss them. You have to have a conversation about them. You can't just enforce them based on a list.
Absolutely right. No, that's a good point. Yeah, that contract's a terrific idea, and I think it'll add to the excitement of the child thinking, oh wow, I've got to sign a contract. It sort of makes them feel a little bit important that this comes with responsibility. This product. So I think that's a great move by Telstra, and I think we're going to see a lot of happy children on Christmas Day.
And the other thing that I learned, I'm sure I knew about it, but it's kind of gone out of my mind. Is that Telstra have a facility on their accounts that allow you to turn on parental controls, basically, where you can limit the usage times, you can limit the usage amounts. There's a lot of great things they offer parents. Exactly.
Been around for a while, a couple of years.
But again, you've got to ask for those things and talk about those things if you want to instill them into your kids' accounts. And it's available at an account level. It's not an app. Mm-hmm. You can have restrictions on their account, data limits and stuff like that, based on their account, not on the actual phone.
Just on that, there are others. Well, I think we spoke about, I think Google have got a family program now, an app that lets you monitor your child's phones, as long as they're Android devices. And let's face it, you're not going to give your child a $1,500 iPhone first device. So likely it'll be an Android device, affordable price. You're not going to give them the top-of-the-line product.
$99, Jacko.
Yeah, there you have it. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But there are people don't realise that if they've got internet security software, even the phones themselves have parental control, so you can get into the device and set limits on the type of websites they can reach and set age limits on various things. And even at an internet security software level, where if you've got this internet security software on your computer, a lot of people don't realise, and I'm sure you get this question on the radio too, they don't realise that these controls have been there the whole time. They haven't used them.
And you talk about what's on the device. I'll give you a classic example. My kids have each got an Apple device, an iPod, and Jacko's got an iPad. I've set them up with restrictions, passcode restricted, so I can change them.
Yes.
And they've put an age group in there. Now, I'll be honest, I put them all one level above their age because I think the age restrictions are a bit, very harsh.
So I can't watch AIM movies, but you put them above.
But so Harry and Vivi are at a lower level than Jackson because they're younger, right? And Jackson plays Roblox. I don't know if you've ever seen this game, but it's crazy, okay? Yeah. It's super addictive. Kids love it. Yeah. And the two little ones were crying about not having it. I said, it's because you're not old enough. It's rated for a higher age group. And one of the reasons is the global chat in there. There's chat in the game.
That's not happening. That?
Mate, they understand. As soon as the tears dried up, because originally it was, Harry's like, Vivi's got it and I don't. And I'm like, hang on, that's a bit weird. She didn't have it. She just thought she had it. She was teasing, essentially. Look, in the end, there's been no drama, no conversation about it because Harry goes, well, I'm not old enough. Okay. Like, he just knows it. And you've got to have those conversations with the kids, and some of them are difficult because they're upset and you want to give it to them as a parent, but you've got to have those conversations. You've got to put those restrictions in place.
That's a really good point, with parenting and games and being responsible. We're talking about the phones here, but even in the gaming world, that's another thing. Games are going to be very popular this Christmas, no doubt about it. And I've seen with my own eyes parents buying their kids MA games, R-rated games. Like, we're talking Call of Duty, which parents think, it's a lot of fun, they're shooting, but they don't realise how graphic these games are.
When you play through the story, there's exposure to some pretty serious themes there.
Incredibly explicit stuff.
And we've talked about it. So a lot of kids might play it, but sit there with your kids and watch it like a movie and explain it to them if you have to. But don't just buy your kids Grand Theft Auto 5 thinking they're going to have fun, because the stuff they're going to be doing is... R-rated stuff.
It is pretty graphic. Like, I've played Call of Duty, World War II, the campaign. I'm in the multiplayer, and it is very graphic. It's rated R for a reason. It's 18 plus game, and other games. I think Star Wars Battlefront. I don't think that's as high rated as Call of Duty, but
it is rated high.
There is ratings there for a reason. Just like we're talking about parental controls and different age groups. please pay attention to these games. I've seen this with my own eyes, parents abusing staff members in game stores for not selling their child an R-rated game.
Yeah.
I've seen it with my own eyes. So, you know, parents, take some responsibility. You don't want to give these games that are not appropriate for your child. It's just not the right thing to do.
Two Blokes Talking Tech, let us know what you're doing with kids and smartphones. What age are you giving it to them? What are the restrictions you put in place? Start a conversation at Stephen Fennig, at Trevor Long, hashtag Ziggy Zaggy. Well, you already know Arlo by Netgear, the worldwide leader in smart home security and the creator of the world's first 100% wire-free weatherproof HD security camera. Well, now the best in the business is the Arlo Pro, with even more features, including two-way audio that allows you to talk to your kids, pets, or whoever's at the front door right from your smartphone. Arlo Pro has a quick charge, rechargeable batteries, night vision, live on-demand streaming, and yes, still 100% wire-free and weatherproof, so you can easily monitor your entire property inside and out. Plus, get the Arlo Pro Arlo solar panel and you can keep that thing charged forever. Arlo Pro takes just a few minutes to set up and you can check on your home or business from anywhere using the free Arlo app on your phone, tablet or computer. Know what's happening in real time with advanced motion detection and never miss a moment with free cloud recordings for 7 days. Visit arlo.com/au for more info. Arlo and the new Arlo Pro by Netgear, every angle covered.
Two Blokes Talking Tech. You're listening to Two Blokes Talking Tech with Trevor Long and Stephen Fennig.
So some interesting news this week from Samsung. And I had a chat on the radio with Dr. Wu from Samsung's American branch, talking about the advances they'd been making in health and fitness and general well-being. Now, there's a lot to this. Obviously, we can talk about things like the gear range of watches, what the smartphones are able to do with health detection and monitoring. You know, it's a huge competitive market. Apple and Samsung both working heavily in this space, health and fitness. But one of the things that they announced was a clinical trial using Gear VR headsets of pain treatment. So essentially, someone who is suffering some form of pain, and I'm really dumbing this down, can sit with a Gear VR headset on and watch content that is specifically designed to, I'm just going to say, essentially trick your brain into fading away the pain.
Your brain, yeah. So it affects different areas of your brain. Sort of your pain receptors in your brain are located in different parts of your brain where you do other things. But it was Samsung's first healthcare smart summit, and this is more a B2B summit where there was a lot of the medical community there. Samsung obviously is a tech company and now a medical health company, talking about all the applications that's possible with VR, and they do have actually some that exist, and they're seeing that the use of VR goes a long way to the two solutions I heard of was there's one called Iris Vision. Have you heard of this, where you know how some people have severe vision problems where they've got to be really close to an object to see it? They're not completely blind, but they've got to be literally inches away from something before they see it. By using Iris Vision with the VR, I've heard examples of sufferers with these severe vision impairments can actually sit on the couch with their family watching television rather than having to be a meter away from the television.
And just to explain, Iris Vision also, it basically customizes what it does based on your visual impairment. So if you've got, I don't know the exact names, but if you've got the vision impairment where the center of your vision is restricted, what it does is it uses the camera on the VR to show the center part outside of the center of your vision. Likewise, if you've got kind of a lack of peripheral vision, it will show that peripheral vision kind of compressed and squashed into the center of your vision. So it's quite a remarkable use of technology. Now, obviously, you need to wear a VR headset and you can't, it's not like you're going to drive a car like that, but you know, around your home, it's a pretty amazing way to give some restoration of vision concepts to people with an impairment.
I spoke to Dr. David Rue as well. In fact, his interview is going to be on my next Tech Guide podcast next week. And he was talking about this other condition with, you know, he did mention the fact that, you know, there are applications for to use it with cancer patients, with elderly patients, with people with disabilities. But there was one thing in terms of elderly patients. He said there is there's a syndrome in like, especially nursing homes and hospitals. It's called sundowner syndrome, where the people get a little bit anxious and upset when the sun's setting. It's an actual condition where they even get violent. It's this condition that comes over them during these sunset hours. And he said that the VR can really help them get over that. And the sort of content they show them, and this also applies to dementia patients, is content based on some of their memories. So the VR might show them, for example, a street in Paris, and it'll remind them of a trip they did to Paris, yeah, when they were younger. So it's sort of all that. I think it's that association through the VR that envelops them in this environment that does something, sort of helps them sort of shift in their mind away from this thing that they're suffering, and helps them get over it using the Samsung headset, the Gear VR.
I was blown away by this because I've now seen maybe four or five great instances of VR usage in healthcare. And, you know, I think VR is rubbish as a consumer tool. I think it had a fad. I think it's like 3D. It kind of disappeared, you know.
Yeah, no, well, I think there's applications for it.
But I think this is showing that it has better and greater applications.
Oh, totally. I think if you went to the average person on the street and said, what do you think of VR? The first thing they're going to think about is games and experiences. Whereas this use of it in healthcare is remarkable. The amount of things they're achieving is incredible.
Well, it's a good announcement. Stephen's written it up at techguide.com.au. You can listen to Stephen's interview with Dr. Rue on Tech Guide podcast next week. And if you subscribe to Talking Technology with Trevor Long, you can listen back to that one as well. And then you can tell us who had the better interview.
Not competitive much, are you?
Well, I was down in Melbourne last week for the opening of Apple's new Chadstone store. Now, there was this is a massive centre in Melbourne, in a suburb of Melbourne, and there was already actually an Apple store in the Chadstone shopping centre. And
did they move it or just refurb it?
They moved it.
I was going to say, I can't see them shutting down for 5 months while they refurb, you know?
What actually happened was that the old store closed at 9 o'clock on the Thursday night, and then it was boarded up. The next morning, it was boarded up with a sign that says, "You know, we'd never ever leave you. The new store is around here." And so that the very next morning, they unveiled the new store, which is three times bigger, has like more than 200 staff, and adopts the new style and layout of some of the Apple stores that we saw. I think one of the first was in Union Square.
Yeah, the first one was Union Square in San Francisco. Which is now, I mean, I know what they've done with Chadstone's amazing because they've got the big glass doors and everything at the front but Union Square is something very, very special in terms of the overall layout with the two-story, the kind of cantilever construction. It's amazing. But it's more about the layout of the store, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, and also the features of the store. In my report, I did describe an Apple store as like another massive Apple product. It is a product that they continually develop and improve, redesign, just like they do with the iPhone and the iPad. And in this instance, Chadstone's the first in Australia to have this new design, a new look and feel. They've got the Forum, which is this massive area in front of this big 6K video screen where you can listen to the Today at Apple sessions. I think the one where we were there last week, it was how to edit your photos on your iPhone. So these little handy little sessions to help you get the best out of your products.
What I think is interesting though is how do they do this everywhere? So I can imagine they can, you know, find a different location in Chatswood, they can find a different location in Hornsby, they can do this with different stores. But what do they do in Sydney? That store is going to date very quickly once these things roll out. Now, they have three levels in Sydney.
They do.
What do they do? Shut one level down and refurb it? Do they work their way from the top to the bottom?
Yeah.
I mean, they can't move that store.
Yeah.
They just can't. Those Absolutely, glass panels yeah. are worth too much money.
Yeah.
But that said, they have shut down the Fifth Avenue store in Times in New York.
Yeah, they relocated.
But that's the point. Is they've got a temporary one while they build a new one. So well, maybe that's what they'll have to do in Sydney.
Absolutely right. Yeah, no, I asked the question whether hopefully we'll see something closer to home for us in Sydney where they have this store. But yeah, the other changes though, the Genius Bar became a really popular place. There's no bar anymore. They do have what they call the Genius Grove, which is under these ficus trees where you sit down. There's like the leather seats beneath the trees, and that's where the Genius come and talk to you sort of one-to-one. So there's no bar separating the Genius and yourself. They've also got what they call the avenues, which are the walls down each side of the store showing all the accessories and cases and headphones and all the gear that works with all the stuff that's still in the middle of the store, which are all the tables that have – they're still there, have got the iPhones, the Apple Watches. And
the
iPads.
Thing about the Avenue is it's laid out in such a way that it's also seasonal, so they can bring in different products at different times. Yeah. But also it's – I mean, Apple does what Apple does. They just highlight specific products. It's kind of a retail goal to be stocked in Apple. Totally. And they have – here's the thing, folks. If you want to see how much influence Apple has – look at the packaging of a product in Harvey Norman and then look at the packaging of the product in Apple. They have to have specific style packaging. You'll often find it's always white. Mm-hmm. So the packaging of something might be black in one area, but they'll have a white version for Apple stores so you can see where it was bought. Now, the Jimu robot, I remember a couple of years or last year I reviewed at JB Hi-Fi, it's like three packs at Apple. It's just they've just got one pack because they're not going to stock different ranges and it looks different. It's just amazing the influence they have as a retailer.
Absolutely right. Yeah, the Chadstone store also has another feature. They've got another little room, not a little room, they call it the boardroom, where it's actually off the shop floor. So you go into this back room and it's set up like a boardroom. There's a long table, there's a display, a couple of chairs, and this is where small to medium business customers, entrepreneurs, developers can come and talk to Apple staff about the best products and software for them. And there are drawers on either side that have all the different products that can be demonstrated. All on the wall are beautiful etchings from Apple Park, so glimpses of the new campus.
Remember we saw those in downstairs at the Steve Jobs Theater in those back rooms. Quite beautiful.
Yeah, well, they have a similar setup within the boardroom, which is an area where you can have a bit of one-on-one with Apple employees. But the store employees too, in the avenues, they do have experts in the various areas. So say you're in near the headphones. So they've got someone who's an expert or an audio expert who can give you expert advice on the best headphones for you. They may have a photography expert near all the camera, the photo accessories and all those sort of products as well. So it's not only the look and feel of the store, it's also the staff that can actually help make the store a better experience for customers. I think Tim Cook earlier this year, member at Worldwide Developers Conference, he said that the retail is all about – it's not all of just about the selling. It's more than that. It's about the learning and being inspired and connecting with other people. So the sale of a product is the result of that, and that's what Apple do so well. They give you that great experience. You get that good community feel in the store, and more often than not, people are buying products there as well.
Well, the interesting thing for me is who will get the 500th store?
Well, there's 497 in the
that's
world.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, there'll be three more. Who's going to get the 500?
It'd have to be in the US, I'd say. Or maybe an area where...
Maybe like India or somewhere like
that. Yeah, I was just thinking somewhere where there's massive population where they want to really make an inroad, like China or India or someplace like that. So, 497. I'd say we'll tip over 500 in 2018 without a doubt, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I would think so. Now, the other Apple news this week that I thought we'd quickly share is Bendigo Bank launching Apple Pay. And this, to me, is... a really important moment. Now, I know Bendigo Bank's not the biggest bank in the world, but having so many banks with Apple Pay now, except for NAB, Westpac, CommBank, and Bendigo, and the reason those four are critical is because they all took Apple to the ACCC. They all made an application to the ACCC to have the ability to act as a cartel, to work together to negotiate with Apple. And the ACCC rejected that. It's not corporate best practice. That's why they had to apply to the ACCC. And so they were all filthy that they lost that. They believed it was in their rights. And I, to be honest, thought those four would never budge. But Bendigo have done the right thing here. I reckon they got. I reckon they were bullied essentially into coming in as part of that action because you know, imagine them in this playground, right? There's his little Bendigo over there, CommBank, National, and Apple are here, and Westpac are here, and they're going, listen, mate, come with us. We're gonna take him on, right? So Bendigo's budged early, given the big four conglomerate they were in. I think it's great because they've admitted it was what customers wanted. As they launched, they didn't put an ad out, they didn't put a press release, they just put a thing on Twitter and they went back and started replying to customers who had asked for it.
Yeah.
Saying, we've done it, here it is.
When do you think the CommBank and the rest of them are going to do it? Even now Bendigo, well, they've obviously thought, well,
I think it could be 2020.
Yeah. Really that long?
I think they're all just such arrogant pricks that it could be that long.
So that long, eh?
But that said, if one of them drops in 2018, they'll all go.
Absolutely.
Because they know.
Domino effect.
Yes. And I don't think Bendigo is the first domino, put it that way.
Well, Bendigo's kind of the lightweight of the group, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, I think CommBank, every time I write a story about Apple Pay, every time, and you get this too, people's comments saying, oh, CommBank, when are you doing it? Or National Australia Bank.
The tide is turning, and this is what those banks need to realise. So when ANZ launched, I had people join me and say, well, we're going to switch. But then most people would say, oh, come on, CommBank, come on, CommBank, come on, CommBank. But now I'm starting to see more people going, I've given them the brush and I've moved.
Yeah.
So people are switching now again.
Yeah.
They've given them a year and a half. And I reckon they're going to start seeing that. And I don't think people are holding out as much as those banks think they would. And people want it still. There's no doubt.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's inevitable. I think that customers are expecting it, just like they're expecting Android Pay or Samsung Pay, whatever kind of pay they want. I think it's up to the banks to provide what the customers want.
Give the people what they want, folks. Two Blokes Talking Tech, episode 324.
See the incredible with the latest ULED TVs from Hisense. The all-new Hisense Series 7 is back with features customers have embraced, including depth of rich colours and detailed picture quality. With Hisense ULED, Australian consumers will always have access to the very best in content and picture quality. ULED is the result of internationally patented technology to bring the best out of its remarkable LCD LED TVs. Key features include 4K UHD resolution, HDR plus wide color gamut, and local dimming for a viewing experience that will blow your mind. The stylish ULED Series 7 opens up Netflix to 4K HDR. There's also Stand, Freeview Plus, and YouTube all built in. Using the Hisense interface, customizing your TV viewing experience has never been easier thanks to the ribbon menu. The Hisense 4K ULED Series TVs come in in various range of sizes, including 50, 55, 65, and an enormous 75 inches. See one for yourself today at your local electronics retailer. Hisense, see the incredible.
Well, we know our good friends at Netgear have a huge range of products, and we both use the Orbi Wi-Fi system for some time. And look, I think it's it's an amazing product. I think it's under great competition now from Google and others. But here's the funny thing: I'd never really given much thought to, and that's if you're a small business, cafe, retailer who has customers come in who want Wi-Fi. What do you do? Do you just go and buy a router, put it in and tell everyone the SSID and the password? Do you have to go to some extremely expensive solution that allows you to have that kind of, login and special password access for people? Great news. And I got to tell you, this is bloody phenomenal. Orbi Pro is a new product from Netgear. It's about $824, which puts it only slightly higher than the actual standard Orbi. Yeah. And what you're getting for that is slightly different looking device, but it's very similar to the original Orbi. But it comes with an amazing amount of wall mounts so that you can wall mount, ceiling mount. You can mount this thing pretty much anywhere in your cafe, for example. So you put one, you put the router next to your modem in the back room, and then you put one smack bang in the middle of the cafe. And I'll keep using the cafe example
so
for now.
So it's a two-pack, three-pack?
Two-pack, yep.
So only two packs available.
I'm sure you can get extensions, but all that matters is the two-pack because that's what most people would use.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's an Orbi, right? So you set it up and it creates a network between the devices, which is for the back channel, and then it creates a network for the users to attach to. but it has three networks. The first network is for the administrator, and it allows the person with that SSID and password to get access to A, the back end, B, the devices on the LAN ports. The second network has a unique SSID, and that's the one you'd give to your staff. And it gives them a single password you give to the staff, their devices every day, they come in, they connect, they've got internet, they're good. The third network, mate, this is cool. Now, you would have set up guest networks before on your modem. It's essentially just a different SSID network name and a different password, and it restricts your guests from getting access to your network drives and devices, right? Just gives them internet, which is good. Yeah. Okay, it's safe.
Connect, like I've given you today.
Yeah, I hope I've got access to everything. So if you're in a cafe, you would normally use, say, the guest network, but there's one thing missing. It's the expiration of that password, and it's that, you know, that login page that says you agree to our terms and conditions. Mate, this thing sets it up for you. Okay. You put your logo in. I just copy and pasted their terms and conditions and changed Netgear to EFTM. And now if you come to my house, the EFTM network, you click on it, password's Trevor Long, comes up.
I'll be doing some drive-by downloading at your place.
Bring it up. Bring it on. It comes up with the login page, just like you're at the Qantas Club or the Virgin Lounge.
Awesome.
So it comes up with the logo, the terms and conditions. You put in the password, you click agree, and it automatically redirects you to EFTM.com.
As well.
Yeah, so you've got a redirect in place. So you as a cafe owner.
You're holding a gun to people's heads, they've got to visit your website. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, but think about it as a cafe owner, you would direct them to your Facebook page.
Absolutely.
Or maybe even to a menu. Plus the session expires in 2 hours.
Ooh.
So they have to log in every time. And you know, obviously
with
then.
The same password? Or
yeah,
the password
same password.
Changes.
Yeah, no, the password doesn't change. You have to change the password as the administrator. Okay. So as the administrator, you could change the password every week, for example, and put it up on the menu.
Every day, if you want.
Yeah, on the day. Like they do in lounges.
It's a busy cafe, this one.
Now and then they change it and they put those around.
Yep.
My point being, if you've been to a cafe once or you work in the shop next door, you just get the password and you're sorted. You're on free Wi-Fi.
Yep.
But if you work in the cafe in the business next door, your Wi-Fi is going to drop out every 2 hours. You have to put in the password. It's going to be annoying.
Yep.
And if you put the password inside the shop, it means people do have to come in. Or when they order a coffee, that's when you give them the password.
Maybe you put the password on the receipt like a lot of other businesses
do. That's right. So, mate,
about 2 hours, a long time to be in a cafe. That's a lot of coffees.
You wouldn't want
some tired ass just ordering one coffee and sitting there for
2 hours. A bunch
of
people sit around for hours in places where there's free Wi-Fi. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, because some places restricted, I think, to 30 minutes, an hour.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But, mate, to be able to get an off-the-shelf
really
solution,
yeah.
I think it's $824,
yeah.
Which sounds like a lot of money, but in terms of the Wi-Fi features for a start, just its speed and ability, great.
Yeah.
And that's a $699, $799 product. So then to add in the wall mounting brackets, I'm telling you, it's comprehensive mounting system.
Did you wall mount yours? Wall mounted?
No. Have you met
my
wife?
So you just replaced the older Orbi? Or
yeah. Obviously, I've set this up in a house, so
yeah,
I've just put it where the Orbis were.
You haven't opened a cafe recently
No.
But what I was...
But I'm going to speak to the good people at Netgear because my mum does run a pub. Hello.
Yeah. Walk a road. Let's go.
Yeah. And she's got a range extender upstairs, for Christ's sake.
Oh, my God. Orbi written all over that.
Going to need two satellites.
Okay, good. Well,
it's a big pub.
Well, that's what my review is going to be up on Tech Guide next week, and I'm still setting mine up. But I'm interested to see whether it will be possible to use the older Orbi satellites to expand this. I'm not sure whether that would work.
I understand your question, but I just don't see the point. Because you're buying this for your cafe.
But if you may have invested in the older one.
Maybe you invest in the old one.
Let's think, I might just use one of the older satellites to extend out the back here. So it creates a wider mesh network.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know, and I didn't check on this, whether the actual hardware inside is exactly the same and it's just the firmware that's different. Because if that's the case,
they should
charge $50 for the firmware for people to put on their old Orbis if they've got a business or a cafe or something. Not sure.
But they're already paying, how much is it?
$829. No, but if you've got the old original consumer Orbi and you want that login, guest login,
business
features.
Yes.
That's an idea. But interesting how the wall mount's an interesting point too, because you can, it's really handy. I've got a couple of my modems wall mounted.
Ceiling mounted.
Yeah, absolutely. I've already got a network in here anyway. I've expanded the network into here too, into this room, but the Orbi will definitely get a start.
You've got Wi-Fi issues, mate. I'm definitely getting some form of Wi-Fi infection.
I have a lot of networks, and they're all Star Wars characters.
It'd all be better if you only had one.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah,
yeah.
Congestion, interference. There's a bunch of reasons why too many networks is
so
a bad
you think
thing.
My Wi-Fi could be better than it is now.
Yeah,
by reducing the number of networks I've got. All right.
Have I made that clear enough?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's sort of, I've got this hoarding mentality when it comes to Wi-Fi. I can't bring myself to remove a network.
Your problem is the only reason you're hoarding is because you create a different Star Wars character for every friggin' network. And it's embarrassing.
Is that too? But yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, Two Blokes Talking Tech. If you've got a small business.
I've got an illness, is it? Or,
yeah, you do. It's called Star Wars. That's an illness, mate. Two Blokes Talking Tech. If you're a small business and looking for Wi-Fi for your staff and your customers, Orbi Pro review at EFTM.com.
Two Blokes Talking Tech. You're listening to Two Blokes Talking Tech with Trevor Long and Stephen Fennick.
Well, on the subject of spoke about the new Orbi, the Orbi Pro, and the whole Wi-Fi coverage. And how often do you hear people, and you've heard this a lot, people complaining about the NBN and their speeds? Interesting story that I wrote on Tech Guide. There was an infographic that was pitched to me. I thought, yeah, I'll give that a run and also write a story to go with it. And the story is all about the things you can do. The things you're doing that could be affecting your internet speed, and things you can do to obviously improve your internet speed, and various things, you know, they're very simple things, but they could help you. It's those little 10%ers that can have build up and make your Wi-Fi in your home a little bit better. Now, I'll be clear, it's impossible to make the internet come into your house faster. So whatever connection you've got, whatever you're getting into your home, that's there. But how you can improve the efficiency of your wireless network at home is something you can do.
So I'm going to stop you right there and say there is some things you can do to make sure you're getting the most from your internet coming into your home, though, because if you've got, for example, fiber to the node, having too many phone plugs in your home, having bad old wiring will slow it down. So what we're saying here is once you've established the best quality internet coming into your home, either through choice or doing improvements to your wiring, most people that ring me on the radio say, oh, I'm getting speeds of 15 and I'm paying for 25. And I say, how are you doing the speed test? Oh, I'm a mobile phone. And where are you standing? In the lounge room. Okay, but you're two rooms away from your Wi-Fi router. Go and stand next to it. In fact, I would prefer that you plug the computer in. Borrow a computer that has Ethernet, plug it into your modem, do a speed test. That's how you know what the internet speed in your home is. Mm. Wi-Fi, I sit next to my router, so I get amazing speed on Wi-Fi. And if you're using a standard router supplied by your telco, it won't have beamforming and tri-bands and all these kind of things and mesh networks. So when you go to the other side of the house, it will be slower and the signal will degrade. That's one of the biggest challenges. People need to know that actually in a 21st century world of NBN, you can be buying 50 meg or 100 meg or 25, but if you don't set up a full wireless network across your home, you're going to have rubbish Wi-Fi.
The positioning the router is something we'll talk about in a minute, but first up, cable v wireless. And a lot of people think, well, I've got a smart TV upstairs or I've got a gaming console. Wired will always beat wireless. So
100%.
My suggestion, if you're renovating a home, building a new home, run cables to every place where you're going to have a television. Run, just as you're going to put an aerial connection in the wall, run an Ethernet connection there as well. So have cables, Cat6 cable, all running back to your modem, wherever that's going to be, hopefully in a central part of your house. Cable will always beat Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi gets you speeds of up to around 860 megabits per second in ideal conditions, but cable can get you 10 gigabits per second over Cat6. So that's one thing. If you can connect a gaming console or have it on Wi-Fi, the connected console with the cable connection is always going to be faster. Other things, we mentioned routers, and having an old router will not give you the optimum performance. So if your router's 3-4 years old, might be time to think of a new one, whether it's an Orbi or any of these other mesh networks like Develop or Google Wi-Fi, or even just having, like, D-Link just released the Cobra modem router last week. That's a tri-band router, all the latest bells and whistles, beamforming technology, quality of service, allocate your device to the right band. They are things that can drastically improve the performance on your wireless network. The other thing is router location, which you touched on earlier. Having your router in a central part of your house, ideally in an open area in sort of the middle of your home where that'll give an even distribution of the signal to the rest of your house. Now, if you can't do that, using a range extender or maybe taking up a mesh network like Orbi and those others, that will help you as well. The other thing too is a lot of people think, well, my internet's slow. But often it's not their internet slow, it's the site they're visiting that's slow.
And I'll give you an example of that. Go to speedtest.net and what it does is it automatically finds your best server. But ignore that. Go to choose a server and zoom out and choose one in America. Choose a server in America for speed test and hit speed test. The speed will be lower because the packets take longer to get there and it's a slower network. For example, Aussie Broadband have their own speed test server. And so what that does is tell me this is the speed that I'm getting within my paid network. Anything outside of that, I can't control. Life goes on. You know, you turn on your Xbox for the first time in a day and it wants an update for 1,000 gigabytes.
Takes 45 minutes, yeah.
And it actually says, you know, here's the speed. And you look at it, it's bloody slow. It's because the Xbox server updates probably in bloody Seattle.
Yeah.
And of course,
4 million people hitting at the
correct.
Same time.
Yeah. So it's very different where you access the speed and what speed you're checking. So, there's a lot you can do.
There is, but yeah, it is your connection's getting the bad rap where it's actually the server that you're accessing. Like every website's hosted on a server. So my site, your site, you're actually, while you're seeing a website on your screen, you're accessing a host server. So depending on how that host server's been configured, might be need to be updated, that can affect your speed as well. Mm. So all these little factors can affect your speed. And of course, network traffic, it's like a regular highway. At popular times of the day, and you experienced this driving to my place this morning, There's a lot of traffic, and that's just like the internet's the same thing. So you can just imagine when at 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, when everyone's had their dinner, and they decide they've cleaned up the dishes and they're going to sit down and watch a bit of Netflix. Mm. You're not the only person doing that on your network. Yeah. So obviously, the more traffic at that time of day, you're going to probably experience slightly slower speeds than you would in the middle of the day when everyone's at work and no one's streaming Netflix in the middle of the day. So that's just another thing to keep in mind. But I have written a story and there's a really interesting infographic to go with it so that if you do these things, you may see an improvement in your speed at home.
Yep, well worth checking out. The details on that infographic are at techguide.com.au. Well, Stephen, the Minute Reviews, and let's kick this one off together. The LG V30, you looked at this phone at IFA, was it?
IFA,
was announced.
Yeah, I've had it since IFA, and it's now available. It's been available for 2 weeks now.
$1,199. It's not a cheap phone. Let's start off with that. It's a premium phone because LG, obviously, it's their premium phone, and they've taken that tack, which, you know, as you know, I disagree with the pricing of these phones at a high rate because of their features. Unfortunately, I think you need to be at a lower price. So that's my only negative about this phone is the price. I think this phone would be unbelievable at $899.
It would be remarkable.
Up against the Huawei P10, for example,
I reckon even $999. Just the thought that it's under $1,000 would really move it. And the pricing wise, it's obviously a lot cheaper than the iPhone 10 and the Galaxy Note 8. But it is more expensive than the iPhone 8 and only $30 cheaper than the iPhone 8 Plus.
Yeah.
So things to keep in mind.
That's a challenge for it. But if you're looking for an Android phone and you don't want to be the sheep that gets the same as everyone else, this thing's unbelievable. Like, it's a beautiful design. The gloss back is nice. But it has, for my mind, there's two key features, photography and video.
Yeah.
Photography, it has the wide angle and the standard lens on both front and back, so you can do wide angle selfies. Now, I did
glass
one of these.
Glass lenses too. It's got glass crystal lenses in it too.
We did a selfie on the road trip where, you know, you could kind of see Bowen and I, but then when you hit the wide angle, you see the car as well. So the wide angle view is amazing. We took a photo where we stopped at the Kunalpan silo, which is this silo with a big mural on it. Taking photos with an iPhone or the standard lens, you just get the car and the bottom half of the silo. You put the wide angle on, you got the whole silo.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
That's been on a lot of the LG
phones. No, absolutely. But the
really
quality of it is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
The video stuff is where they've really upped the game though.
Yeah.
So again, hard to describe, but we're sitting here in a large room, and there's a BB-8 on the floor over there. If I'm pointing the video, I can choose cinema mode or cine mode, and then you can have this point to zoom. So what happens is you tap on, rather than if you just zoom in with your fingers, it zooms in from the center. So it zooms into the center of the picture. But with CineZoom, you can choose the thing on the right-hand side, and you, as you zoom in using a little toggle, A, it's quite a smooth zoom as opposed to the pinch and zoom style.
Yeah.
It's quite smooth, and it zooms over to the right-hand side. Mate, it's awesome.
It's good. Yeah, I've got a picture on my review on Tech Guide of I was on the harbour the other day, and I zoomed in on just this ocean liner in the middle, and it sort of was on the right-hand side of the image and sort of went over to that part of the picture. Yeah. Cinemode, another great video feature that gives you different hues and tones to your video. Surprisingly, the different tones actually changes the look and feel of a video and sort of gives you that more cinematic feel. I want to talk about the screen, 6-inch OLED screen, which looks fantastic. And again, fingerprint reader on the back, so you get the best of both worlds. You get all screen, you still get fingerprint security. And LG was one of the first companies to put that button on the back, put the fingerprint reader there as well. Screen looks fantastic. The audio on this is also excellent. You got DAC high-end audio on this thing, and B&O Play tuned earphones included. B&O have also tuned the audio experience. You get all these different presets so you can optimize the listening experience. So there's that another big tick there. One thing that I don't know whether it's because I've got an early version or it was sent to me from Korea. There's a lot of bloatware on it. There's a lot of these apps that you can't delete. There's all the
They're not on the standard one.
Cameras,
I've got the standard one.
Must be
it's
mine,
excellent
then.
Because there's all these Korean things and like connection cellular things. And anyway, I have written that in my review. That's probably the fact that I got mine from sent to me from South Korea. But overall, I think this is a kind of one of the best kept secrets. You don't hear much about it. Everyone's talking about the iPhone 10, the Galaxy Note 8, the Google Pixel. The LG seems to have sat in the background. I'm calling it sort of the best kept secret because it does the things all those other phones do in just as good quality. So you've got your video covered, photos covered, audio covered, great looking device, really fast processor, good battery life as well, great design. It is, I think, the dark horse of the whole smartphone market at the moment.
Yeah, not a bad one to consider. As we say, the only thing we'd probably recommend is it was at a lower price, but we appreciate that they need to price it where it makes the money, and that may be the case. It's a JB Hi-Fi, $11.99. Check it out, techguide.com.au.
Two Blokes Talking Tech. You're listening to Two Blokes Talking Tech with Trevor Long and Stephen Fenwick.
And Stephen, something nice and new from Samsung too.
Yeah, this is just a quick one. I thought we'd talk about the new Galaxy Tab A 8.0. 8.0 being the size of the screen, the 8-inch screen. This is a tablet designed for the whole family. So this is more their entry-level tablet. They do have the Tab S, the top-of-the-line tablet, but now they've got the Tab A, which is designed for have all these modes so that the kids can pick it up, the parents can pick it up. They've got these multi-user mode where you can set I can set up for me and the kids, and everyone has their apps when they log into it. There's also kids mode where you can hand it off to your child and all they can see are their apps and games that they like.
Samsung, I remember years ago, Samsung had a Galaxy Tab Kids and it was a robust, orange or yellow and green device. This thing is only $329. It's a very nice metal design. It's a good size tablet. To be honest, if you're buying a tablet for the family this year, a lot of people buy a tablet, for all the kids as a shared gift. $329, you're crazy not to consider this
and it's quality too, bad quality.
The most apps now are available on Android, so you'd be surprised that you don't need an iPad. That's the number one thing people need to consider.
This is what really the competitor against the iPad Mini. A lot of people think, they think of a tablet, they think iPad Mini. Definitely worth considering the Galaxy Tab A because it does. It is a nice size, 8-inch. It's not too big, so it's good, small enough for a child to use. And $329. It's not going to break the bank. That's the Wi-Fi. If you want to go 4G, it's $479. Silver and black. It's available in. I think, it's the device. I think that people will be surprised how much use they get out of it because it's the sort of product that people don't buy for themselves. They buy for the family. It's a device that everyone gets to use.
Absolutely. Check it out. Techguide.com.au and EFTM.com. Stephen, you've given your guts, mate. We thought it was a slow news day, but we've gone an hour as always.
Yeah.
Remember when this was a 30-minute show?
I do remember that. well, how long? Six years ago?
Yeah, it was
about 35 minutes.
Do you reckon people are listening the full hour these days?
I think they do, yeah. Well, I think we've always promised to say something at the end of the show to prove that people have been listening. So why don't we think of a code word to say right now?
We've said that before.
No, but we'll do it this time.
Right.
We'll think of a word, and if people have listened to this far into the podcast, they can just tweet us that word just to prove they've listened all the way through. So hashtag Ziggy Zaggy, and the word, what word do we want to think of?
Warriors.
Warriors. Yeah, he's looking at my replica Warriors vest signed by the original cast, by the way.
It's a replica, mate.
So let's say Warriors is the code word. And if you want to tweet that to us at Trevor Long and at Stephen Fenwick on Twitter, hashtag Ziggy Zaggy, that will prove that you've listened all the way to the end. So Warriors is the key word.
Well, let's quickly check. I don't know if we've had any reviews lately, but I'll just quickly bring up the reviews on the iTunes. If you're on the podcast using the iTunes app, be appreciated. Yes, was a 1234. Great tech newscast. Great job, guys. Good laugh when you're talking about the taking the piss out of each other and untangles the confusion in tech gadgets. Keep up the good work. Mondo Senior, great podcast, guys. I love this podcast. It's one of the few I subscribe to. I travel a lot by car through country New South Wales. Rely on podcasts to get me through the travel. I particularly like this podcast as it's pitched at a level that's neither too bogged down in jargon or nor overly simplified. Hits the sweet spot for me. The other aspect is you follow a format which creates consistency, and though you might portray that what you do on the day is random, I suspect you both put a lot of work into getting it right prior to recording. Look, I've got breaking news for you, Mondo. Although, did we read that one before? I feel like we've read that before.
You might have, I think. Yeah. Mondo double dipped there. He got another mention.
Yeah,
I think.
But good on you, Mondo. But we spent about 5 minutes planning this today.
I think it was about 7 minutes today.
Okay.
We just couldn't work out the lead, and we've sort of had to work out a different structure. And yeah.
Anyway, the code word is Warriors. Tweet us, Ziggy Zaggy, Trevor Long, at Stephen Fenwick, and hit us with the Warriors.
I'll tweet that little vest up there. That's my original.
Don't give away the code word.
Well, after people have replied, I'm going to reply to them with the photo.
Oh, okay. That'll be their gift from you.
They'll see.
It's better than any other random pick from you.
Yeah. Well, we can send them a selfie if you want.
You know what? If you want a specific
photo, we'll take a selfie in front of that.
Will we?
And we'll send it out. Send that out. Anyone who replies on Twitter with the code word will get, they'll be gifted a photo of the two blokes in front of my replica Warriors vest with signatures of the original cast of the movie. And I'm talking movie that was released in 1979 about the Warriors.
Is anyone else fallen asleep?
It's got the very famous line that even you've heard this, you know, where the guy's rattling the bottles, Warriors. Come out to play. Have you heard this movie? Okay. Well, people who know what I'm talking about will understand it. Trevor.
Everyone else, just write hashtag no idea.
Trevor, who's a total movie Luddite, who would not know a thing about them, won't know what I'm talking about. For those who do, they'll appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the bagging, Stephen. thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading, Stephen. Let's do it all again next week.
Absolutely right.
Two Blokes Talking Tech. You're listening to Two Blokes Talking Tech
with Trevor Long